Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, the College Ball Show returns. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss everything revolving around the best sport during the regular season. Of course, that is college football. We're going to start the show by recapping week 8. Massive upset. Once again, these upsets are just coming week by week and a multiple of them. But this was a big one because it was another unbeaten that went down. Ohio State got smacked by Purdue. There were a variety of other tight games and upsets as well that we'll definitely get to. Of course, we're going to look at week 9, preview, predict some of the big games coming up, the marquee matchups, also the games flying under the radar. If you listen to the show, you know we like to talk betting lines, over-unders, and we usually kind of give you some against the spread advice as well. Obviously, the big matchups, the marquee matchups, like I said, in week 9, number 7, Georgia gets to try to redeem themselves in another big matchup. Let's see if they can show up against number 9, Florida, who's been hot, number 14, Washington State, who, by the way, got a pretty darn big win, takes on number 24, Stanford, who is looking for a big win and need a big win there where they're at. Number 17, Penn State, and number 18, Iowa. Penn State, they've lost twice now, so obviously that hurts them. However, and it's been both in conference too. That's what really hurts them. But Iowa, you know, is still alive on that side of things in the Big Ten, you know, battling there with Wisconsin. And, you know, more of the games that are included in week 9. If this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, we stream it live right here, blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio. It is under the Rope It Dope Radio podcast umbrella. So we stream it live right here. This is basically the headquarters. It archives right here as well. We're also available on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts, Player FM, Spreaker, Stitcher, TuneIn, basically anywhere you like to listen to podcasts, you'll find the College Ball Show and Rope-A-Dope Radio podcast in general under the whole umbrella. We're also part of the Grueling True Sports Podcast Network. You can actually stream that on iHeartRadio. You can stream it on Spotify as well, so you can listen to the show right there. Check out the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. Head on over to gruelingtruth.net. It's football, it's basketball, it's baseball, it's boxing. It's everything in between. The gruelingtruth.net, they got a great sponsor over there, mybookie.ag. Head on over to the gruelingtruth.net. Listen to a podcast there. Read an article. I do college football predictions every week. And while you're at it, make a bet. It'll link you right to mybookie.ag. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host now and see, just kind of update with them, see what's going on. How you doing, Marshall? What's going on, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's tomorrow's Friday, and Friday as a teacher is always a beautiful, beautiful day, because that means for a weekend you don't have kids. So I can't complain. I will say, though, I've learned, Chris, that science stuff in hurricanes truly affect the weather. I'm not lying, man. For probably the past 2 months, it's probably rained every day in Texas except for maybe five or six. I mean, this month, it was just crazy. Just for kind of basic life. I'm moving down here, I can't for warm weather, but, man, it's like living in Seattle. I mean, I'm back home where we're from, Minnesota,
yeah.
It's cold, but, man, it was just, I think for legit about, we had like a 13-day stretch of rain every day. So that hurricane stuff has just kind of trickled over. But it's finally going away. Fall season's around. I get to wear my hoodies. I got like freaking 13 sport hoodies, so time to start wearing those. And that means that football is getting more serious, and I can't complain. And I will say,
yeah, and
hopefully,
I mean,
Chris, people listen.
Before you know it. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Sorry.
I hope you're good. But, yeah, I hope people listen to my pick. I said, if you got to tease LSU and you got to tease LSU and, oh, God, who's the other lock I had?
It's a good pick, man.
LSU and Oklahoma.
Really good pick. You don't even fucking know it.
LSU and Oklahoma, I said tease them both. Now, realistically, you could have just parlayed them together because a tease means you take points off the point spread. It reduces your odds a little bit, but it gives you a better chance. So if you're new to gambling, I think Oklahoma was a 10-point favorite and LSU was an 8-point favorite. So by teasing them, then Oklahoma has to win by 4 points. And LSU had won by two. So you're shaving money off of a two or three or four team teaser. And they both easily covered their spread. Oklahoma rolled. LSU's defense came out to play. So another successful week of gambling picks. My money went back to the sport gods on a Sunday when I bet Philadelphia Eagles to win. They're up 17-0 at home, and they blow that game in the fourth quarter to Cam Newton. But nonetheless, another successful week of gambling picks. So, like Chris said, we like to kind of give out picks. The past 3 out of 4 weeks, we've been giving out picks that hit. I'll save the gopher pick of mine for later, but just want to start to show off on a positive note with LSU and Oklahoma making some cash and profit for myself and hopefully some people that made that same bet as well, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, we got plenty of time to talk about that stuff, and you should have listened to the old veteran, the wily veteran, that knows his squad, and also just knows.
I didn't put any money down on the Gophers.
Just knows the predicament.
You convinced me to stay away.
yeah, but by the way, you said it's cold up here, dog. It's been sunny up here. It was 60 the other day, and 60's hot for October. It's 52 right now, overcast. We're not going to see below 50s until next Wednesday, so I don't know what the hell you're talking about. However, I do. Relate as far as the rain. It's been 2 years in a row now, and especially, like you said, during this hurricane season in general, the grass is green. You know, we're basically having spring and fall now. It has rained a ton. It's either sunny and 60 or it's raining. It's really strange for fall weather. Some of that rain even turned to sleet for a couple hours, and then it was like a nice day. But that's just Minnesota for you. However, we got a lot more important things to talk about than the weather. And, yeah, there was some marquee matchups we're going to get to. You know, you just talked about that LSU game. That was a big game. There's a variety of big games, no doubt about it. But the biggest upset, bar none, one of the biggest upsets of the year, one of the biggest, I think it's probably the biggest upset of the year, isn't it? I mean, what's been a bigger upset?
Well, I mean, it depends how you value upset, my friend. You could say Old Dominion beating Vautech was a bigger upset, truly, if you're talking about
right. Teams
that had an impact on the playoff picture, then yes. So, you know, it depends how you value the word upset. But for headlines and rankings, I would say yes.
Yeah, an unranked 3-3 team beating an undefeated number two team. I'd say that's pretty much there. But you're right. And there's probably a couple more out there too. But that Old Dominion. By the way, we're going to get to the crafty pick a little bit later too. Because good old Dominion. Yo. There's been some wild games in the crafty pick of the week. Whether I've been on the short end of the pick. Because in the first part of the season, I actually was on the short end of the stick on some of those. Now I'm getting lucky, and it's coming back the other way. But like I said, I need to shut up. Let's talk about this freaking game. Purdue, who, you know, hasn't had a great season, did start to win a little bit more of late. You know, they jumped on them kind of early, man. It was 14-3 at half. They got up to 21-6, you know, on their first possession as far as, you know, Purdue. I believe Ohio State, let me check really quick. Yeah, Ohio State did score a field goal to make it 14-6, but then they went right back at it, got up 21-6, and they first forced a turnover on downs on an 11-play, 73-yard drive, which is huge for their defense. And then it was kind of like defensive, you know, battle for a second. It actually was a three-and-out type of back-and-forth. Purdue scores another touchdown. Ohio State looked like they were going to try to mount something at 28-13, and then they just kept, you know, spreading it out, kept saying, nah, dude, just stay away from us. And they were able to keep them away. It was very impressive. You know, we've been talking about, I mean, this Ohio State offense has looked really good, but the defense has been shaky. Obviously, you know, having one of the best pass rushers gone now, not just injury-wise, but gone for the season, that doesn't help things. It doesn't help things at all. Purdue managed to throw for 378 in the air, three touchdowns, had a Knox, I believe his name. Yeah, DJ Knox, 16 carries, 128. You know, they only turned the ball over once, I believe. It was just a fumble. Actually, Knox fumbled it. But they just played steady ball. They didn't, you know, they didn't get a bunch of first downs or whatever. They weren't necessarily great on third down, but damn, Purdue's defense forced Ohio State into 22 third downs. You know, 11 of 22 is actually pretty good, 50%, but 22 times, that's saying something. That's saying a whole lot. Big, big, big win for Purdue. And once again, last year, they lost to Iowa, and they didn't just lose, Marshall. They got shellacked. Once again, it happens.
Oh, I remember.
Against Purdue. And probably against a lesser team than last year's Iowa team, because at least Iowa at night, we've talked about how difficult that can be. But both of them have been, you know, just ass-whooping. What do you think when you're looking at this score and you're like, wow, they're going to get this done? Because I was really impressed how they kept scoring touchdowns to keep it a 2-3 score gap, which is really important. You know what I mean? You don't want a team to get momentum. Then they're down by six. There's midway through the third. You never know what happens there. They kept scoring, and they kept forcing, you know, Ohio State when they actually did get drives to have to grind it out and have 8, 9, 10, 11-play drives.
That sometimes, and it's hard to do, but a lot of times in college football, obviously no single person can watch every team. Heck, even the ESPN game day analyst guys, like they don't watch everyone play. So sometimes a team's win-loss record can label the team, but it can actually maybe falsely represent them due to bad luck. So, true, Purdue was 3-3. But they lost Northwestern the first game of the year in a four-point game, which was tight the whole way. Eastern Michigan beat them by 20-19 in week two. Mizzou beat them 40-37 in 3 points week three. So you're 0-3, but you lost your first three games by a combined 8 points. So are you a crappy team? No. Does 0-3 look like you're garbage? Yes. But then they beat BC, beat Nebraska, beat Illinois. Games that weren't impressive, but games they had to win. And I guess you could say BC is decent. So the 3-3 record you keep hearing is, you know, below average, but they're a pretty damn good 3-3 team because they never really got blown out. They're at home. They have a coach in Jeff Brohm who, like P.J. Fleck at Minnesota, is just an extremely motivational, kids buy into him kind of coach that all the players love. He's kind of a new kind of styled guy that bases his success based on motivating people, not necessarily just automatically saying, hey, you're going to come to my school, do what I want. No, it's more of a, hey, if you buy into me, I'll give you love back kind of concept. So I think he's a hell of a coach. They came out, played a great game, and it's also kind of been a trend, as you said, of Meyer having this one bad game a year. I think I saw on ESPN stat where this is, I think in his past 4 years, they've all, or in the past four games that Meyer's been down by 10 or more points at halftime, his team has never come back to win. And the crazy stat was, I think they said Meyer's had like five losses at Ohio State by like more than 14 points. Saban's never had one at Alabama, just to kind of put in perspective, of because a lot of people say they're the two best coaches in college football. So for whatever reason, for the past couple of years, Chris, when Ohio State's been down in half in a tough game, it's gone from just down in half to the score gets even uglier with this, with Iowa last year. And I just think Purdue kept pressing the hammer down. The one
yep.
stat that blows my mind, I'll tell you, and then I'll talk about a Purdue player and throw it back to you, was Ohio State's defensive yards allowed per play. Meyer's defensive line is his calling card. Urban, you think of Urban Meyer, you think of recruiting. His D-line is what he's always good at. Their defensive yards allowed per play currently during this week, they're ranked 71st. Ohio State's defense, who's supposed to be elite, supposed to be dominant, supposed to be good, supposed to be this rock star, all-star defense, is 71st allowed in giving up yards per play. And shit, they played Minnesota, Indiana, Tulane, Rutgers, Oregon State. Okay, they had TCU and Penn State for tough games, but they've had a pretty crappy schedule. So I think for once, you had a coach who wasn't there to start off the year, a bunch of turmoil, a defense that's overrated, and Purdue just said, screw you guys, we're going to come out and kick your ass. And my last note is, if you've not seen Purdue play yet, they have a wide receiver named Rondale Moore, who is arguably the best receiver I've seen play this year in college football. I did see Hollywood Brown for Oklahoma's fast and flashy, but if you've not seen this, Rondale Moore, who's a freshman for Purdue, the kid is just special. He's already got, I believe, I just had a number.
He had 12 catches for a buck 70.
Oh.
He had 12 catches, buck 70, and two touchdowns in that game.
And he's been doing this almost every game, Chris. This kid just doesn't take games off. He's truly a very special, and he's a freshman. So they have found themselves a very nice piece. 57 catches, 728 yards, 7 touchdowns. So hopefully the Gophers can find a way to cover him up because the dude's a freak. That's all I got. Great win by Purdue. Meyer chokes again. Yeah, I say that jokingly. And, again, Purdue won, so props to them.
But when you say rock star defense, that wasn't the case this year. That wasn't the case this year. They were not a rock star defense all year long.
It is true. It's
and
just
now,
rare
the
for
last
them
couple
not
of
to
weeks.
Have an elite D.
Right, right, right. In the last couple of weeks, their best defensive player, Bosa, and he's not playing, actually. He's got an injury to where
mm-hmm. –
he doesn't feel like he can come back, and they have to do a surgery, or maybe they already did. I don't know. But he's done. He's done. They were hoping he'd come back. He's done now. He's really just preparing for the draft at this point after his surgery rehabbing. So he ain't coming back. He's not like a savior that'll help you in that Michigan game or something like that, you know. Obviously, that hurts, though, when you're, you know, here's a guy that – will be a top five, top 10 pick getting around the edge when you're trying to stop someone from passing the ball. That hurts. But this is the first defeat of an AP top two team for Purdue, the Purdue Boilermakers, since they beat, what do you know, Ohio State in 1984, 28-23. That was a closer game, though. that's for sure. Defensively, just to keep adding to the woes of Ohio State, which I'm sure you won't mind.
Nope.
They've given up 35 plays of 25 yards or more this year. That's
wow.
a lot. That's a lot. A whole lot. And then on the other side of it, although they put up a lot of yards, they were having problems scoring in the red zone. They had 5 red zone trips. They came away you know, that's trouble. That's trouble. So defensively, they've been real shaky all year. Their offense is the only reason why they were ranked that high and unbeaten. That's for damn sure. It's pretty crazy. They got their butt whooped, and they couldn't get a real sustained running game going. They just couldn't. They had 76 yards total. The highest guy only had 9 carries for 45 yards, and I don't expect him to have a running game, because when you're down like that, especially in the third quarter, you're going to pass more. In fact, they passed the ball 73. They had to pass the ball 73 times, Marshall. Holy shit. I knew it was a lot, Jesus. But I thought it was in like the 50s. And Haskins, he did throw a pick, but he was 49 of 73 for 470.
That's pretty damn good.
That's pretty good for 73 passes, dude. But like I said, the red zone killed him. Defense killed him. It was ugly. It was ugly. And while we're in the Big Ten, there are more games to get to, no doubt about it. Michigan goes on the road in a black and blue type, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. It was a tight score for quite some time. Michigan was able to get some separation, was able to make just enough plays. If you look at Shea Patterson's numbers, they don't stand out crazy, but he made just enough. He threw for 2 touchdowns. They only threw the ball 25 times for 212. They just did enough to get the job done. And it was a quality win, especially with Michigan State kind of turning their year around a little bit of late, especially with that recent win. Quarterback, though, 5 of 25. That is, wow, 5 of 25 was Michigan State quarterback. And overall, stifled Michigan State's offense to the point where they limited Sparty to a pathetic 94 total yards, the lowest output on offense since 1947. That didn't just happen a couple years back. That was after the World War II. This wasn't a shocker, but man, you know, if you look at stock market, if you look at trending topics on Twitter, Michigan's trending up, and they got a great loss considering, one, they didn't get their ass kicked, and two, it was an unbeaten team who could finish unbeaten. What did you think of this game? And what do you think of Michigan now? It seems like everything's in place for Harbaugh to win the Big Ten, something he hasn't done in the last, you know, since he's been there.
Yeah, I mean, the defense came out to play. We've talked a couple of times about how Michigan's really only played 2 bad halves of football. First half against Notre Dame, first half against Northwestern. They lost one of those games. And this is an offense that continues to get better. The defense has always been really damn good. And now you have a quarterback in Shea Patterson whose numbers are never really super flashy, but you don't need a super flashy quarterback. And I would say he's above average. But that game, 14 of 25, 212, 2 TDs. That's all you can ask for. In a game that was pouring rain and it was 7-0 at half. So just another basic just defense carried win. Versus Wisconsin, same thing. Defense played really damn good. Offense did enough. I'm with you, man. He's got this team going the right direction. You're 7-1, 5-0. And obviously the Ohio State game is probably going to be a huge deal. But yeah, this is everything's going the right direction again. Hopefully that little karma that, you know, bit them on the fourth and chains call or the backwards punt. You know, maybe that all that stuff gets erased. But I'm with you, man. Michigan's playing great football right now. And they're trending the right way. And it seems like every game Shea Patterson gets better. And besides maybe one team in the country who I think is just on a different platter this year, Michigan's playing really damn good, and they're about as good as anyone in the country except you know who. Speaking of,
you're talking about
you know
the
who,
Gophers. But anyway,
speaking of you know who,
speaking of Alabama, they won 58-21 over Tennessee in a walkaway. Oklahoma, we spoke about that early. It was a competitive game. Then they stretched it out all the way to 52-27. Central Florida, who barely got by last week, they managed to kick it in high gear, beat East Carolina, who's known for offense. That's about it, 37-10. Kentucky kept it moving in a very close game, 14-7 against Vandy at home. Washington was able to beat Colorado. Same type of deal. They just stretched it out near the end, 27-33. Penn State bounced back from taking a loss to Michigan State with a tough, tough road game at Indiana. Not on paper, but when they actually, you know, blew the whistle and kicked it off, 33-28. Iowa looked really good, 23-0 against Maryland. We wondered which Maryland team was going to show up. Well, we got our answer. Temple upset Cincinnati, who was ranked 24-17 in overtime. South Florida beat UConn 38-30. Wisconsin handled Illinois 49-20. That kind of sums up some of the other games. Now we're going to highlight and get inside a couple of these other marquee matchups. Clemson, whew, wow. They needed a game like this where they just looked like the team. You know, speaking of, you know, putting a team up, you know, beyond, you know, with Alabama, we don't really have that team just yet. I guess you could make an argument for a couple, but not really. I'd say Notre Dame because of their, you know, their hard early schedule. Now it's going to get a little lighter. It's not going to look as good. But they still have that, you know, nice, not very great win, not nice, great win over Michigan, you know, at the beginning of the season. But Clemson, and going into the season, we thought it was Clemson and Alabama and everybody else. That's the way it felt on paper. Clemson didn't really live up to their side of the bargain just yet. Well, in a game that we didn't know much about NC State, still don't know much about them because they didn't show up. 41-7, I think it was like 21-0 before you could even turn the fucking channel on. We don't have to go in depth on that one, but that is impressive and should be matched up because it was two unbeaten teams. We didn't know, you know, what the Wolfpack was all about, and now we do. But let's get into a couple other tighter games. There was an upset, Washington State, and speaking of upset, I thought you were going to lead with this one. Since you picked the upset over Oregon, 34-20, very, very good win. And that was another one where Washington was kicking the you-know-what out of the Ducks. Now, the Ducks, I got to give them credit. They did make it a better game. They mounted a comeback that they almost were able to, you know, overcome. But the Cougars kicked them down near the end, 34-20. And then, obviously, LSU, you know, just shrunk Mississippi State to only 3 points, 19-3. What do you think about some of these games? Obviously, the big one to talk about really is Washington State and Oregon, since Oregon was a slight favorite. And, you got that one right. I believe you picked Washington State, right?
Yeah, they're just something crazy about that team. Like we said, it's the biggest game they've had through campus since, you know, that quarterback unfortunately passed away from some personal stress, unfortunate issues. Leach had thought about leaving and came back. As you know, they're always, as long as he's there, they're always going to have an offense. And this game, just from the start, I watched a very good chunk of the first half, and I could tell the momentum kind of disappeared, so I did a little more challenge here from the second half. But game starts off, Washington State has a great drive. It ends up with a little bit of a fall apart there with an interception, but they have momentum. And so then the defense comes out, and Oregon had a false start. They had a fumble in the end zone. They had a near safety. They had two more false starts. It's just, you could tell the place was going nuts. And I got to give Washington State fans a lot of credit because they say that stadium only sits like 40 to 50,000 people, and it's outdoors. So, I mean, to get a really loud stadium when you're outdoors and you're not even touching 60K for fans, that's impressive. I mean, people compliment how tough it is to play at Oregon, but Oregon Stadium, I know that thing has to sit at least 70 to 80. Oregon Stadium is huge. But just a little town in Pullman, Washington, they came out to play offensively. Oregon never seemed to have an answer. There were drive after drive after drive. Some drives ended in Washington State not scoring due to their own personal mistakes, but it wasn't really due to the defense. And Oregon's quarterback, obviously Herbert, didn't have his best game. I would not put that all on him. It's just the whole team really didn't have their best game. Just like that happened last year with a couple of games where Georgia was at home or Auburn was at home. Sometimes when you watch a game in college football, when the home team comes out hot, you just kind of know you're screwed. That was kind of that game. I mean, Washington State's up 27-0 at half. You just kind of had that feeling like, oh, God, this is college football. Went on the road is tough, and just today is not your day. I know it's kind of a cliche quote, Chris, but we see it happen a couple times every year where that home field is nuts. The players are behind, you know, the fans are behind the players, and just it's like, dude, it's not happening. And it sounds very simple, but that was just kind of that momentum. And in fairness to Oregon, they've had a pretty damn hard stretch of games here. They battled with Stanford. They went to Cal, and they played Washington, and then they had Wazoo. So in fairness to them, they could just be kind of a worn-out, beat-up team. Because to have a nice Pac-12 parallel, we were not surprised when Stanford lost to Notre Dame, because Stanford had a crazy stretch of games in a row. Well, this was game four, crazy stretch in a row for Oregon, and you lose to Stanford on a freakish game, you know, beat Cal, Washington battles you to OT, and then you go to Wazoo, who was dying to win this game. It was just kind of a really bad setup on the schedule for him, Chris, where it would have been a hell of an impressive win, but these are college kids. It's hard to expect a team to get that hot and stay that hot for such a long time.
Oops, I forgot to unmute myself there for a second. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we see that, obviously. You know, it does suck for them that they had, you know, that game where they just blew it, man. That's rough for them, you know, at home.
True.
Oregon, anyway, I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
I mean, they should have had that damn game. You know, that's rough. So, but, and you know, it's not – Oregon makes – it's similar because Oregon makes a lot of noise, but they – it's not as big a stadium as you think it is. It actually isn't as big a stadium as you think. Yeah. I can't remember what the exact number is, but I do know it's a little smaller. Actually, we were talking about stadiums not long ago, and I forgot what it was, but it's not as big as you thought. I was actually surprised too. It's kind of
54,000.
It's kind of funny that's right. Yeah, but you'd never guess it, you know?
No. I was off by a good. I assumed that was, wow. Huh.
Yeah.
I apologize. I was wrong. It's 54. I would have guessed mid-60s, 70 for sure. So, all right, I'll shut up. But I was definitely wrong there, Chris. Good call on that. I would have kept going. I wouldn't have thought to ever check that.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about stadiums and random stuff, and it just came up, and me and my buddy that I was talking to, we thought the same thing. We're like, okay, so that's at least 75, 80. You know, we're
sure.
Kind of randomly talking about stuff, and we looked it up, and we're like, wow, what the hell? So it's kind of funny that came up. But, yeah, big win, though, for Washington State. They seem to pull off an upset. Of course, they did have like a long stretch where it seemed like they were going to be a very highly ranked team. Was that last year or the year before? I think it was last year, wasn't it? Weren't they like 7-0 or something like that? But they generally pull an upset off a year. You know what I mean? Just because of that offense, especially at home like that. That was a big win. And LSU just grinded it out, you know. Joe Burrow didn't do anything special. He also didn't do anything to screw it up much, you know. So LSU keeps the ball rolling. They did make that Alabama-LSU in prime time on CBS, which they you know, if it's a meaningful – I was about to say meaningful fight. If it's a meaningful game, they try to do that. You know, they try to put it in prime time on CBS. Generally, it's that late afternoon – slot that CBS has for the SEC, but every once in a while they put it in prime time, so that's cool. It just tells you, you know, that LSU is nearing close to being one of those you know, potentially elite programs again, after having, you know, some good years, but you know, you expect them to be at 10 wins almost every year, and that hasn't always been the case. Well, sure, you may have a couple other items you want to get to from week 8. The item that I want to get to, or actually I don't want to get to, is Nebraska. You know, Nebraska completely walloped my Gophers. They were up 28-0 before you knew it. They battled back minorly. I want to stress minorly. Looked like, okay, there's a little hope, man. If they could get this 3-and-out, get the ball back, and then it was another touchdown. You know, and in what looked to be a game that was tightening, then was 53-28 at the end of the day. This Martinez that they got right now, remember the Martinez from about 4 or 5 years ago under the coach that they didn't like that kept getting them to 10 and 11 wins? Remember that Martinez quarterback? He's a pretty quarterback. This dude was like a reincarnation of him. He started out 11 and 11. He was 25 of 29 with 3 touchdowns for the game. And this is where it gets real bad. And our defense with the Gophers right now is real bad right now. 152, 125, and 109. That's how many 100-yard rushers that they had. 389. That's crazy, dude. That is nutty. But I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. And when you look at, you know, some of the games with Nebraska, the Colorado game, they could have won. I think the game after that they could have won. Then they got handled by Michigan, no doubt. Wisconsin, you know, pretty much cleaned them out as the second half. The second half team, Wisconsin generally wears a team down. They barely lost to Northwestern. So, sure, you know, maybe they shouldn't have been, you know, winless. But Scott Frost finally, though, gets a win, man. You know, that's got to be a weird situation. A guy that's an alumni, they already know him because he was a stud quarterback when he was there. And then he comes in and proceeds to go 0-6. In that Northwestern game, they could have won that game 7 different times, and they just couldn't get it done. So I knew it was coming. All the stars were lined up. And, yeah, we you know, with the Gophers, it's week to week, dude. It's week to week. Because they were coming off Ohio State game where they looked competitive, no doubt. And even with Iowa, that was a 38-31 game, and the offense really stood up and kept them in that game. And it was pretty good, actually. I liked the way they fought back in that game and kept making it a game. But in this one, yeah, sure, there was some fight back, but it just got ugly too quick to where a lot of their game plan – just went out the window. The quarterback got hurt. Morgan, the backup quarterback, came in and actually played pretty good. I think he was like 11 for 15. But, yeah, my Gophers got beat again. Anything else that you'd like to touch upon from this week? Otherwise, we got to get into this week 9 because there are some marquee matchups. We still got a couple of games to look at and go, huh, really, Vegas? Are you sure, Vegas, against the spread type of stuff? And, of course, the world-famous money-making pick of the week.
Well, I mean, I could talk about Lane Kiffin, but I think people are catching on to his offense. I think next year they'll bounce back. My boy Kiffin's struggling this year. So I'll touch on
that's called karma,
the USC team.
My friend, karma. Generally, when you're at a program, generally when you're an elite coach and you're at a program, it gets better. I'm not sure what's happening here.
I will say this was on a long end of the Saturday night. I did see San Diego State on against San Jose. Now, San Diego State, pretty good football team. They're 6-1. San Jose State is now 0-7 on the year. San Jose State had the ball and was moving with, like, almost no time left in the game to try to win. I think that would have been, like, the first time in, like, 38 years that a 0-6 team would have beat a team that is 6-1 or 5-1. It was almost an upset where you're like, really, dude? like, you know, San Diego State, they're pretty much always a bowl team, always pretty damn good, great program. And to see a team who's 0 for almost pull them off, that would have been kind of crazy way. My other West Coast news, USC, freaking Helton is now, I think, 1-12 as an underdog. Utah always gives us problems. We almost never win there. It should have beat us at USC last year. Utah wins 41-28. Utah, you can argue, is one of the best teams in the Pac-12. I mean, no one ever seems to ever talk about them, but no one ever seems to play well there. I sure as hell would not want to play them on a consistent basis. I mean, they did lose to Washington State 28-24, and they lost to UW by 21-7. So, I mean, okay, maybe they're not the best, but Utah, dude, that team is just always well coached. Like you said about a different coach, Utah almost always gets 8 or 9 wins every year. So that kind of wraps up my West Coast chat. To put a bow on it, the crappy pick of the week last week, my oh my. I mean, we had safeties. We had a fourth quarter explosion. We had a little bit of everything. And as you said, the dice keep rolling. Old Dominion, 37. Western Kentucky, as Chris said, the elite smug Hilltoppers who just, they ain't good people. Old Dominion gets up 14-7 in the first quarter. Then they get out, scored 17-3 in the second. So, you know, it's down 17-24 at half. In the third quarter, Chris, the score was 2-3. Our boys fought hard to get a safety.
And
then gave up a field goal.
Crappy pick of the week right there. That was a crappy game then. That turned into a great game, though.
And then after the safety, the boys were like, you know what? When's the last, you know, Old Dominion had recorded a safety in 224 games. That's where they have stat. So that motivated the Monarchs to score 18 points in the fourth quarter and have an impressive come-from-behind win to win 37-34. They send the Hilltoppers rolling down the hill, bags flying everywhere, food's been trashed, the campus is a mess. Blake LaRussa, 21 of 32 with his cannon arm for Old Dominion Monarchs, threw for 327 yards, one touchdown, no picks, and Kayshawn Strong. Damn, that's a badass name. Kayshawn Strong.
That is sweet,
damn, that's awesome.
K-E-S-T-A-N,
for Kayshawn Strong.
Run for something.
Man.
Politics is older, dude.
Jeez, that is like the ideal running back name. My God. Kayshawn Strong, 27 carries, 125 on the ground, 2 TDs. He carries the boys to a victory. And our picks stay hot, man. That's my finishing on a good note. Oh, and the freaking Appalachian State beat our Raging Cajun adopted team, but I just kind of wanted to throw them in there quickly. So, yeah, another hot pick, my friend, another hot pick.
Speaking of that is bad that our Raging Cajuns. However, they helped create history, though. That's what they do.
Whoa.
In a loss, they'll still create history because Appalachian State is ranked in the top 25 nationally for the first time in school history. That's pretty dope.
So what you're saying is we took one for the team to help build their stature, so they'll do us a favor again later. I like that. We're a classy team. Classy organization.
Dude, and that Old Dominion game, like, that was – it's hard to even explain how many things went wrong and right. Like, you'd say, oh, they did this. Nope, but there's 12 men on the field. So they actually have another play. And just all sorts of just random shit happened in that game, dude. Like, you literally,
sure.
there's articles written about the game that are like well over 1,000 words where you're just like, all this stuff happened? And that's how Old Dominion does it, man. That's how Old Dominion does it. They just find a way. And like you said, those Hilltoppers, you can put your nose up to us if you want. But I knew my boys would get it done. So that's the thing about the crafty pick. I have no clue what the pick is right now. As we speak, it's in the chamber. It literally is in the chamber loaded it up for me. I have no clue who it is. But I do know who the marquee matchups are for this week as far as on paper, and they go as number 7 Georgia, number 9 Florida, number 14 Washington State, taking on Stanford. I believe that's at Stanford. Number 17 Penn State and Iowa. That's a big Big Ten game, especially for Iowa, who needs to keep pace with Wisconsin, because Wisconsin beat them earlier in the year. There are a variety of other games that we'll get to, but off top, off the rip, like the kids say, what's going to happen here? Georgia had a bye week. Georgia did have a bye week. What's going to happen here, man? Georgia against Florida. Florida's been trending in the right direction since taking an early loss. They beat LSU in a big, big-time matchup. The quarterback is starting to play better. Franks, the defense, generally has been there for them the last 5-6 years. That kind of keeps them in games. But this is a must-win marquee matchup for pole position, or not pole position, because Kentucky's there. But, you know, how it works out, how it could work out possibly anyway. But this really is a key game for the SEC East. Whereas Georgia, their schedule is just garbage so far. And the one game they had where you can line them up and go, okay, yeah, okay, so what was that? What'd they have there? They got their butt whipped 36-16. I suppose South Carolina was a good opponent, and they did look good in that. It was a decent opponent, no doubt about it. It actually was ranked against ranked back then. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, Marshall's favorite, his favorite thing to go by,
yeah,
that's how he makes all of
sure.
it. 69, and the best thing about it, he likes it when it has the point something. So it's 69.8. It's not 70.
Jesus.
Not 70, Marshall. It's 69.8, which kind of gives me hope that the Gators are going to win, because otherwise it'd be a full 70, wouldn't it? How do you see this one? Break it down, my friend. Is Florida all the way back?
I'm just going to be immature for once and say at least that damn thing put up a good number of 69. That's about how much respect I have for that freaking FBI. At least we got a little adult lingo in there with that number, because, yeah, screw that thing. From Florida's perspective, I've seen them play parts this year. Their defense is elite. Sadly, they're not at home. And I still don't think that Florida's offense is truly it's not the run and gun Spurrier, it's not the Tebow. It's just kind of does enough. Beat Vandy 37-27 after a crazy crackback block. You did beat LSU. You scored 27 at home on a couple of big plays there. You beat Mississippi State 13-6. You lost to Florida. You beat Tennessee. I'm not completely proven on Florida's offense, but maybe to be realistic, this could be a coming out party for them, because what has Georgia done this year? Georgia's run defense has been bad. Mizzou gashed them for 274 on the ground. Now, the scoreboard wasn't overly impressive for Missouri. But from a Georgia's defensive standpoint, Georgia's defense don't give up 274 on the ground normally. That's not like them. LSU pounded them at the line of scrimmage. So if you're a Florida fan, I would just dial up the running game. Again, Florida's not a team that should throw the ball 50, 60 times like Ohio State did this past weekend or create stuff like that. So I think for Florida, keep it simple. Use the run game. Clearly, there's some type of weakness in Georgia's front seven, so I'd look to expose that. Try not to make any mistakes. And most importantly, talk about home field, but this is the world's largest cocktail party. I know lately we've been, ESPN won't even say that, which is so stupid. We've become so politically correct in this country over dumb stuff, but it's the world's largest cocktail party. I guess that atmosphere is just insane. I massively drunk people. But I'm leaning with Florida, Chris. Georgia being a 7-point favorite, I think it's a little too high. I would just work the ground game, win time of possession. Your defense, I would say, is just as good as Georgia's. And lastly, try to make Georgia pass. Because Georgia's running backs this year have been, I would say, very impressive. That Holyfield kid, I would run him more if I was Georgia and Kirby Smart. Elijah Holyfield, the son of Evander Holyfield, the boxer. I said it's going up your neck of the woods with time out boxing. Kid's got 65 carries, 488 yards. And when this guy runs, he has an extra gear. Okay, he runs at a speed faster than most. The way he cuts, maybe it's because he got trained with boxing from his dad. I don't know. But the kid's an athlete. They need to give him the ball more. He's the best running back, I would say, on the team. He's not easy to bring down. He's incredibly explosive, and he's getting 7 carries a game, 6 carries a game, 14, 16, 8, 9, and 5. I'm not saying other Georgia running backs aren't the best, but, dude, you got it. Chris, if you haven't seen him play, the dude is just he's going to be in the NFL just because he has a certain boost to him that not many college kids do. He's not the Barry Sanders juke-moving guy like Saquon Barkley is, but when he runs the ball, people, like, get the F out the way, or, like, he runs through you. So I'm taking Florida, and if I'm Georgia, I'd like to see Holyfield touch the ball more. I know people are going to say, oh, Georgia's got a ton of running backs. You gotta share it out and make it even. Well, I would feed your main horse number one. That's my opinion. Maybe a Georgia fan would disagree, you know, with that. But feed him the ball, and I hope Florida gets the win here.
You hope, but what you think Georgia's going to win, though?
Oh. No. I would take Florida plus the 7, and I think Florida pulls off. I think that there's something going on with that Georgia rushing defense that is an issue that won't be fixed. I think Florida finds a way to expose it in a very low scoring game. The way the teams play D, I'll go Florida 20, Florida 21, Georgia 17.
Yeah, and as we know, sometimes stats are misleading. Florida actually gives up more yards on average per game with rushing. However, they've played better teams too. So that kind of can throw that whole skew off, you know, especially even playing Mississippi State. They're going to run the hell out of the ball. Even if they lose, win or draw, they're going to do that. So, so that can be misleading, and you're right. I mean, just based off his dad, you got to give him the ball more. I wonder if they're worried about him headbutting, though, like his dad. Oh, sorry about that, Evander. So anyway, putting the crown of the helmet, I don't know if that'll work, dude. I don't know if that'll work. But I like Georgia in this. I'm going to be on the other side. I'm with you on the low scoring. It's an over-under 52. Would you go under 52 there? Are you looking at like a 20-16 ball game or something like that? How are you under on that?
Yeah.
Go under?
I would definitely lean under. Yeah, I just think that Florida team is too well – they're a very well-constructed team for unders. And I think their defense is pretty damn good. So, yeah, I would go under.
Yeah. I hear that. I'm right there on the same page. Now, we're going to head on over to the Pac-12. They still play football out there. No, I'm just kidding. Stanford. Trying to rebuild after back-to-back losses. Got a nice little win against Arizona State on the road. It was kind of, I think it was last Friday. Decent game. They had a run to where, man, if they had beaten Notre Dame, we actually looked at their schedule and said, hey, they could run the table. And here they are against a hot Washington team, 6-1, coming off that Oregon victory. Will the Cougars keep it going? Or will Stanford say, hey, that was nice. Last week was nice, but we're not going to let you get a lead. Therefore, we're going to ground and pound. Because they've been having problems running the game, ball with their guy Love. He's getting no love right now. I remember seeing a stat where he had like 3 yards early in the game. It was like, well, not early, but like halfway through the game or so. They're not able to run. I mean, I want to go to Love real quick. While you could go ahead and break down this game a little further, I'll look at Love because he's got 348 for the freaking year. And real quick, I'm actually here. He had 11 carries for 21 in a win. He's had one. Well, it came against the Trojans, unfortunately, but he's had 100-yard game. He's been banged up. Don't get me wrong, but overall, they're just not running the ball. They've actually been depending on their pass game, Castillo and stuff like that, or Castello or whatever.
Yeah, I think the numbers speak for themselves. I think going into the season, Chris, a lot of people had this guy's potential Heisman candidate. Not like the favorite, but like, okay, damn, he'll be recognized. But from the start of the year, injuries have just been a concern. His best game of the year, of course, against USC, 22 carries, 136, 6.2 yards a clip. That ain't bad. But, I mean, since then, it's just, I just think he can't get healthy. He's missed two games this year. He said in Arizona State, he averaged 1.9 yards a carry. Dude, if you're one of the best running backs in the country, I don't care if your line is trash or not. I mean, that something's not right. So clearly,
yeah,
that's just not clicking well. I believe at the start, I want to say almost all those carries were in the first half. Because I remember catching part of that game, and I was like, dude, you have seven carries for like 11 yards. What's going on? So I think they might have even shut him down later in the game. I mean, obviously as a coach, you want to keep your player safety a main concern. And I mean, if there's nothing clicking, but with all that being said, I mean, this is just such a contrast of styles. I almost kind of wish that Love was a little bit healthier, because you have a Stanford team who is just always just so damn fundamental, run the ball, and their quarterback passing has never been, you know, awful, but it's good. So you have a run the ball, you know, own the clock kind of team, hard-nosed D, with a team that's going to try to probably throw on average about 50 to 60 passes a game, and will kind of do a no huddle. Again, with momentum being such a massive factor in college football, Washington State probably going to come back down to like their basic level a little bit. You had the biggest win of the year, maybe the best win in the last couple of years in school history, or on campus, I should say. Can they keep momentum going? You know, I'm leaning towards Washington State simply due to that Bryce Love factor. Because you, as good as Stanford's D may be, you almost never see a team, Chris, that shuts out Washington State. Now, Leach might score 30. You might hold them under their 45-50.
A couple years back. Sorry.
True. In that bowl game, I remember that. I think – and holding Leach to 28, 30 points game is good. But I think with Bryce Love not being healthy, that means you lose your time of momentum and time of possession and momentum. I think with the offense being in a little bit of a disarray due to injuries, I'm going to take Wazoo to carry on the momentum. Stanford's only a 3-point favorite. So that's Vegas saying, hey, dude, if we're a neutral site, this is a pick 'em. I think if Bryce Love's healthy, that changes, but we don't think he is. So I'm going Wazoo in a minor upset. I think they carry the momentum. I just don't know if Stanford can keep up with points. And yeah, so yeah, Wazoo and Mike Leach with the win, my friend.
Yeah, I mean, it's 40 to 25. That's the difference in points per game. I like the over at 53.5. I do like the over. I think they'll go over. And it is strange to sit here and look at Stanford averaging 91 a game. You know, for
wow,
a pro football team, you're happy with that nowadays. You're like, okay, we are running the ball. We're not,
sure,
you know, the top five, but we are running the ball. When the Vikes get to 80 or 90, I'm happy, especially this year. But that's crazy. Now, you know, Washington State only, you know, averages 72, but they're chucking the ball. They average 473 yards passing a game. Now, this is where it gets stranger. Stanford's averaging 354 a game, Marshall. And they actually average more yards per game by a fair amount, 405 to 313. But man, they give up. Stanford's given up a lot of pass. Their defense is not dirty, downright nasty this year. But this one's a tough one. I'm gonna go on the other side too. I'm gonna go Stanford, and I just think they're gonna get not out-coached, but the coach is gonna find a way to win ugly. And maybe it'll be pretty because the score will be a little bit higher. I don't know. So, that's where I'm at with that. We'll get to another one of these rank versus rank, and then we'll start to dig in. We did hit the hour mark, so let's think about that as well. Iowa at Penn State. You know, McSorley's definitely going to have to be a dual threat, like majorly. According to ESPN's Football Power Index, they got a 73.6 chance to get this done. Stanley, for the QB, for Iowa, is a multi-threat. He is. He's a good, good player. They can run the ball, as we know. Penn State is running the you-know-what out of the ball, though. They're averaging 240 a game. They're giving up a buck, too. That's a whole lot. Iowa coming off a really good performance where they just shut out, completely shut out Maryland 23-0. They're on a three-game winning streak since losing 28-17 against Wisconsin. How do you see this one breaking down? Because Iowa technically still is in play to get to the conference final, you know, due to Wisconsin, you know, having two losses in the conference.
I think that Iowa's been a more consistently better performing football team this year. So I'll take Iowa. I think for Penn State, they barely beat Indiana last week. I just think they had what they had, the tough loss to Ohio State, and they had the tough loss to Michigan State. Now you barely beat Indiana. I just think that team's kind of hit a lull this year. And I just think that when you look at Iowa this year, they're kind of the opposite. They've won all the games they had to. Unfortunately, they're not playing Kinnick at night, you know, but I just think just they've just been playing better football. Now, I'm not as high on either of these quarterbacks as many people are, but I would say Stanley is definitely taking steps this year to be much better than he was last year. So I'm taking the Hawkeyes. I just think Penn State, they almost lost to Appalachian State too. I think there's maybe it's been too hard to replace the incredibly talented Saquon Barkley. So I'll take the Hawkeyes in the win. Obviously, definitely an upset here going into Penn State. But yeah, I'll take Iowa, and I'll keep it short and simple like that, my friend.
Over under 52.5. That's a number we've seen a whole lot today.
Sure.
I like ball control and a better quarterback. So I'm going McSorley and Penn State at home. Neither of them really have a great win this year. But Penn State was pretty damn close in the two losses to Michigan State and Ohio State. I think they'll get the job done. Right now, West Virginia coming off a bad loss, is up 7-0 halfway through the first quarter against Baylor. Baylor is kind of low-key in good games. They almost beat Texas the other week, or at least, you know, had a chance to. They didn't look good early, but they definitely came back and had a chance in the last play of the game to win the game, or at least tie it. I guess you can never really tell sometimes. But I'm on the other side with Penn State. That's pretty cool. When's the last time on three or four big marquee matchups that we are on the other side? That's pretty dope. That just tells you this regular season. Go ahead and try to debate me on this one. Anybody. The regular season for college football, yes, it's a broken record, but cliches are cliches for a reason. And it, hands down, no one close to the regular season of college football stands out among all organized sports, no doubt about it. What were you going to say? You were about to add something.
Nothing. I was going to add on basically just your point of, you know, how it's crazy how the regular seasons, yeah, I was just throwing in kind of like an exclamation point to the caveat of your sentence.
There we go. Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech just kicked off, so that could be an interesting game as well for us hardcores out there. Minnesota is an underdog, 2.5 points worth of underdog at home. So it's actually a little more, of course, as we know, to Indiana, who's on the up and up as a program to an extent, considering where they've been. They've usually been all offense. It does seem like they're playing a little bit better defense this year. Which Minnesota team will show up? I don't know. Hopefully they bring both their oars so they can put them in the water and oar upstream. Because that's what it's kind of been like these last couple of games. They've been oaring upstream. They need to get the tide going in their way. My Miami squad as well is on the road at BC as a 3.5-point favorite. BC can run the ball. BC generally plays good because it's kind of an old rivalry from the Big East, and they're at home. So that's a Friday night game. Both these are Friday night games. Utah and UCLA play as well. That could be interesting now that UCLA is starting to win games instead of losing them, some by wide margins. Texas Tech and Iowa State. Iowa State's a 3.5-point favorite at 3-3 at home compared to 5-2 Texas Tech. That could be a very interesting game. Purdue takes on Michigan State. They're both 4-3. So as far as just, you know, bowl games and all that stuff, that's actually a bigger game than I even thought as far as, you know, inside the Big Ten. Virginia is looking pretty decent. I don't know how they'll play this week, but they're actually looking a little bit better coming off the heels 2 weeks ago of a nice win, upset win over the Miami Hurricanes. Your squad, USC, takes on ASU. Could be an interesting game. That's an ESPN2 game. Unless you're on the West Coast, it could be an ABC game. Couple other games to get to. Here it is. Mississippi State, which they're like an average, sometimes they look above average team. But they are at home. And A&M trying to win 4 in a row. ESPN doesn't think it's going to happen, or at least the Power Index. That could be an interesting game. That's an over-under set at 44. That's low for nowadays football, no doubt about it. There are a couple of games that I'll mention as well. But, you know, I've kind of rambled here, so I'm going to let you take over for a second and give your thoughts on maybe some other games under the radar. And then, you know, at some point here soon, we're going to have to get to that crafty pick of the week that is just making money by the hour.
Yes, sir. I'm a Mizzou guy. That's one of my favorite teams I root for. But them being a 7-point favorite against Kentucky is ridiculous at home. I would definitely bet Kentucky. I would tease Kentucky. I would find a teasing mate with them because Kentucky is going to run the ball. They're a better coach team. They've had maybe not a better offense statistically because Drew Locke has thrown for almost 2,000 yards this year, but Kentucky being a 7-point dog in Mizzou is just ridiculous. Kentucky went into Florida this year. That blows my mind. You're giving way too much respect to Drew Locke, and that's a team I like to cheer for. So I don't quite get that line at all. Arizona State started off so hot, Chris. Now they've kind of come back down with a very, very damn hard schedule. But I would not be surprised if Herm Edwards and the boys walk into USC. USC, they're just – I honestly think they need a new coach at the end of the year. I just think you have a coach that can't win underdog games. You're kind of having your chance of having a highlight you're already done considering you're 4-3. You're probably going to have a couple more losses. So I'll stop the USC rant there. But I wouldn't be surprised, I wouldn't mind, if they had a new coach in there. I think Helton got a little bit of extra comfort last year from having Sam Darnold, who was a pretty badass guy who's doing pretty good in the NFL so far. So hopefully new coaching change. I would not bet USC this weekend either. And Iowa State, Texas Tech, if you're looking for a game just to chill and watch in the morning, that would be a fun one. Iowa State's always a damn good team at home. Texas Tech is having the best year since we've done our podcast. I remember pretty much every year I would say, hey, I love my man Cliff Kingsbury. And you'd say, dude, your defense is like 150 out of 160. Get real. Every year you'd say that and you'd keep giving me crap. But for once, Texas Tech's got a pretty good team this year with a decent above-average defense. So they're going to get tested, Chris, walking into Ames, Iowa. I mean, Iowa State never has flashy quarterbacks. They're always on like their third-string backup middle linebacker quarterback because guys always get hurt. But all they do is win. So that would be a very fun game to watch at 11 o'clock. And I got a little bit of a breaking news. We get to our crafty craft pick. At least I'll save that. But gonna switch it up just a little bit tonight, my friend. Just a little bit. You're gonna be surprised.
All right. You want me to do the drum rolls or what?
Oh, we're good to go. Okay. All right. So, you know, and sometimes, Chris, you know, you walk into a restaurant and you look at a menu and you're like, God, I can't decide. Am I getting the steak or the fish? Or if you go to a bar, am I getting whiskey or am I getting beer? And sometimes the manager says, you know what, I want both things. So for the first time in crafty, crappy pick of the week history, I'm giving you two games. There's three games, and I can't – I'm going to pick two because these are too good of crappy games
Jesus
to pass up
Christ.
On. So, I got
this
you,
bullshit,
we'll do
dude.
This and we'll get out of here.
This is bullshit.
Okay. Well, okay, first game of the first
just
game
get
of the
to
spectrum. 11 o'clock kickoff. UMass 2-6 against UConn 1-6, and UConn may be the worst team I've seen. Their defense has given up, I believe, like 40 plus plays of 25 yards or more. So UMass for part one. UMass at UConn. UMass is -5. UConn's defense is trash, but UMass 2-6. UConn 1-5, 11 a.m. The game's on ESPNU. Oh, my God, this game's being televised. And
this will be the first crafty pick of the week that's televised ever. We've had ESPN3. We've had games that were streamed. We've had games that were streamed, but we've never had one actually on the air. So I get to keep track of this. Wow.
How is this? 2-6? How is this? Oh, my God. All right, so for part one, break down this barn burner. I don't know how ESPNU had to be drunk making that schedule. Holy shit.
Crazy. So, UMass, and Marcus Camby's not playing this week, right?
Nope.
He's
nope.
Hurt.
And Calipari ain't coaching okay. There either.
Dang. Okay. So, they lost earlier this month and late last September. They lost back-to-back weeks 58-42. That's crazy. That's really weird. Another weird stat, if you look at the UConn, and this is UConn football, right, we're talking about? Because this is a pretty good basketball
yes, sir.
Team right here. Pretty good basketball matchup right here. They're giving up, on passing, they're giving up 325.7 a game. Rushing yards, they matched it, Marshall. 325.7 game, or .7 yards. It's an exact match for a grand total of 651 yards a game they're giving up.
Holy
this
shit.
Is without facing. Okay, they did play South Florida, so at least they had a ranked game in there, for Christ's sakes. I was really wondering,
sure.
Like, have they played? Okay. Actually, I take some of that back. They did play Central Florida, and they played Boise State.
Okay.
Here's the thing, ESPN Power Football Power Index, they got UMass with 65. They literally think UMass is going to get this done. The over under 66.
Whoa.
So who the hell knows what the hell is going to happen in this one. So you'd say if I told you UMass was giving up 42 points a game, would you think that was a lot? Like just theoretically, you think
yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a pretty high number. I think you should maybe be that's looking for a new defensive coordinator. In my opinion, yes.
Well, how about UConn giving up 51 points a game?
Oh,
jeez, Christ! This one, no wonder why they're televising this. And you can tell it's a hot ticket because on Vivid Seats, they're at Pratt and Whitney Stadium at Rentschler Field. What the? It's a stadium in a field? What the hell? Are they playing in a stadium or on a field? I'm confused. 950 tickets left, starting as low as $10. This one's going to be on the air, folks. I'm going with the Husky. I'm going with Khalid Al-Amin from Minneapolis North. I'm going with Rip Hamilton.
Yep.
I'm going with defense. And I'm going with a coach that they still have yet to catch up to all the way with. Yeah, I'm going UConn. 1-6 UConn. I'm going just because of strength and schedule. And anybody that gives up a grand total of 651, I got to go with. I got to go with them. I know the road. I know the road team has been good to me, and I know I'm going to regret this. But the way this season's going, I'm going with the Huskies. It's generally speaking, I'm going with the Huskies here. All right, what's the other one? We got to get this thing going.
Yes, and the other game is another doozy, one may say. You have the New Mexico State Aggies against the Texas State, I believe, Wildcats. New Mexico State 2-6.
That doesn't sound right.
Texas State is 1-6. Texas State is -3 at home. So we got a 2-6 versus a 1-6 in at San Marcos, Texas. This game is not on ESPN.
Are you going to this game?
It's on ESPN. I'm not driving to San Marcos. No, sir. Dude, I bet I could go, though, and get a little – I could probably get media pass to get some audio coverage.
Yeah, you definitely
New Mexico
could.
State 2-6 traveling to. I'll just say we got a podcast. Can you please let me in? The Texas State Bobcats are 1-6. They're fifth in the Sun Belt. They've played. Oh my God, Rutgers beat Texas State 35-7. When you lose to Rutgers by 28, that says something about your program, Chris. But maybe they'll get riled up for a big home match against New Mexico. What's your thoughts on this one, brother, to wrap up one of the best segments ever of garbage teams playing garbage teams?
Jesus Christ. Well, Minnesota was able to beat these New Mexico State Aggies 48-10.
Oh, okay.
God, this one is really garbage. And they
gave
up a ton of...
I had to.
Jesus. The one thing I'll say about Texas State, besides they got a weak-ass name, is, well, you know what, though? Hold the phone, Bobcat Stadium. It's the Bobcat. Oh, they're playing in – wait a second. What's going on here? Okay, so they're playing in Texas State. It's the Bobcats? Is that what we're going with? It's the Bobcats.
Oh,
are there
oh,
a lot of Bobcats
in
Texas?
Maybe like in like Hill Country where they're kind of, you know, I said Wildcats earlier, I apologize. Yeah, Bobcat. I think they're kind of sparse throughout the state, one may say in the mountain areas.
So what's the difference between a Wildcat and a no, I won't go there. I won't go there. However, in Bobcat Stadium, according to Vivid Seats, only 175 tickets left, and they're selling for 14, which is higher than the other matchup. 175 left. Stadium fits 900, so you better get your tickets now. You know what? Just because I'm going with the home team again, Texas State has lost 20-14, 15-13, 25-21, 41. There's a theme there. That means they're in
games.
Yep,
true.
That means they're in game. However, the one thing that stands out about this crafty pick of the week is the better teams you play, no matter if you get your ass kicked by them or not, that you generally win this game. So the New Mexico State Aggies should win this game. But like I said, the way it's going this year, finally Texas State, I almost said Texas Tech again, the Bobcats are going to get off. They're going to finally, one of these close games is going their way. That's all I got to say, and let's get the hell out of here.
The two teams you picked to win have a combined record of 2-12.
I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm doing it. Screw it. I'm doing it.
Oh, and I'm sure at first, Chris, like, what the hell is
if
like,
I
almost
split
doing?
This,
I mean, games.
It's a wash. If I split this, it's a wash for the week. We're doing another, like,
true.
Draw
true.
Wash. If I split it, it's a wash again.
Well, shit, brother. If the UConn Huskies, who give up 51 points a game, who allow explosive plays of 40-plus yards every game, win, I will gladly break down and give you praise to start off our next week's podcast. All right, so on that note, be ready for a recap of some garbage football, and hopefully two teams going from 1-6 to 2-6, because my co-host is on a roll. He's truly being tested, but he is a smart man. I know he can handle this. How that game is making ESPNU, no effing clue. But on that note, thanks as always for listening.
Computer
again,
ranking.
My pick of the week
Computer rankings.
Oh, yeah.
They're coming, people.
True.
They're coming. That's going to be a large segment next week.
My pick of the week is take Kentucky. Mizzou has no business being favored over a team much better than them. So take Kentucky +7 at the window. If you can find a teasing dance partner, tease them up with them. If not, just take them straight. Thanks for listening to the podcast. We're going to head out off a doozy of a last segment. As always, have a healthy week. Enjoy your football this weekend. Make sure to hit us up next week and give us a listen. The boys are out. Peace.